You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Pack, it's great to have all of you here, and we're immediately running down to Auburn, Alabama, and welcome Coach Brian Harsin to the program. It's good to talk to you again, Coach. Thanks for making time. How are you on this National Signing Day?
Yeah, Paul, good to talk with you as well. Great. It's been a great day, and excited about the new players that we're bringing in. Thought the staff did a great job to make this happen, so we've been celebrating that, and then it never ends. So on to bowl preparation, but also just staying focused on what we have to do to finish out recruiting.
Coach, I know you're busy recruiting, but the pundits have been wondering about Auburn recruiting. And it looks like they spoke too soon because the last 24 to 48 hours have been incredibly wild. I realize that's the end result of a lot of work, but what do you attribute this late charge to?
Well, I think it's relationships, number one. I think our coaches having a chance to get out there, get face-to-face. We've obviously had players on campus, recruiting weekends. But to get into the homes and continue to keep building that relationship and sharing the vision of our program with the players and the families is what put us in the position that we're in right now. And I think guys, you know, want to come here and be a part of what we're doing and to be a part of Auburn football. And they see an opportunity here. And so to me, it just came down to continue to build those relationships and making sure that the vision was clear and that our story was understood by the families and our players. And, you know, that's where we are now. We created some momentum and other players, when they see that, they want to be with other great players. And so I think this class is tight. I think the guys in this group have done a great job. And that's the reason why we're in the position that we're in now.
Coach, obviously your program's been in the news a couple of times lately with a change at one of your coordinator spots, as well as the departure of Bo Nix. Can you address both of those and give us an update? I've seen a lot of speculation about where you're going from an offensive coordinator standpoint, but I haven't heard from you.
Right. Yeah, well, we're still working through that process. And no different than bringing the players in here. It's about the right people. And we've obviously been very busy with recruiting and staying focused on just what we're doing today, signing day. And we'll get to, you know, making sure we bring the right coach in here to complement the staff and to be a part of what we're doing. And as far as Bo, you know, I had a chance to, you know, talk with him. And, you know, Bo graduated from Auburn. We're very proud of him for that. He's a great person, great player. And you know, he's going to continue on and keep playing and have a chance, you know, when the season's over to hopefully play at the next level. And I appreciate the opportunity to work with him. He's no longer part of our program, and so now, you know, we have to focus on the future of Auburn football. And we got great players coming in. Holden, who's coming in now, mid-year, as a quarterback, it'd be great to have him here. TJ Finley is preparing himself to go out there and play in this bowl game. And, you know, we want to finish this season playing our best football. So, you know, for us, it's really about what we have to do and moving forward. And then making sure that we're bringing the right people into our program to be a part of what we're doing.
Coach, one other player, and this is the last one I'll ask you about individually, but there was speculation earlier, and I don't know how speculation begins. You're a football coach. I should understand this better, but Tank Bigsby was in the news, and then it seemed like he had a meeting with you and things were cleared up. Could you address that story?
Yeah, well, you know, Tank is Tank's a tremendous player, tremendous person. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, as we move forward, and looking to, you know, playing in this bowl game and the future and all that. You know, it's not just Tank, it's every player on this team. You know, you're always having those conversations with guys, and they're not always negative. It's not always about leaving. It's not always about, you know, things that people speculate. It's just about, you know, guys have goals and dreams. And so we talk about, you know, what we have to do to finish the season, what we have to do or what we want to do moving forward. And Tank's a big part of that. He knows that, and he cares about Auburn. He cares about this program. He goes out there and lays it on the line each and every week and is a guy in that locker room that helps us. And, you know, that's important to the success of our program, and he's a guy you want to have on your football team. So, you know, we understand that, and, you know, certainly as we move forward, excited about getting ourselves back on the practice field tomorrow and preparing to go play against a really good Houston team and to go out there and play our best game. And Tank's going to be a big part of that moving forward.
Coach, when we saw you last, we were sitting there in the shadows of Jordan-Hare Stadium a couple hours before the Iron Bowl, and you had an unusual confidence, a look in your eye, and you told us that you were ready to take the fight. I know that game ended with Auburn being on the wrong side, but that was a moment, I thought, that really stood this program apart. It was a team that fought to the end. It was an incredible game against the number one team in the country now. What do you take from that game, and what did it mean to you to see your team compete like that?
Yeah, you just said it. To see the team compete like that was the most important thing. And, you know, we played a really good Alabama team. The atmosphere here in Jordan-Hare was phenomenal. And so our guys went out there and they fought throughout that game. We didn't end up with the result, but there was a lot of positives to take away from that. How hard our guys played, how they competed. And, you know, our guys know that. I mean, they went out there, they laid it on the line. They gave everything they had in that game. Every single guy, everybody on the sideline. And so, you know, just that mentality, that attitude, you know, that we take on to the field every time we play is the most important thing we can take away from that. And, you know, we know we can play at a high level, and we've got to do some things along the way and make some improvements. Every single one of us in this program starts with me. But as far as how we fought in that game, I couldn't be more proud of our team and the fight they showed. And certainly, you know, that has to be something that continues when we step on the field, and our guys know that. And we got to prepare ourselves properly to go play the game, do the best of our ability, and execute in situational football and play for four quarters. But as far as just the effort, the attitude, and the fight, that was on display in that Iron Bowl. And I'm very proud of our team for what they showed, and I'm excited about our bowl game we have on the 28th, and to see our guys go out there and play like that again, and to show that competitiveness on the field like we did in the Iron Bowl.
Coach, I know you're on a very tight schedule. We always appreciate you making time, and we hope to see you again very, very soon. Thank you, Coach.
All right, thank you.
Great to have Coach Brian Harsin on our program, clearing up some of the news, or the speculation, I should say, of earlier in the week. We will take a short break. Shane Beamer, bottom of the hour. We've already had Coach Lee and Coach Fisher, and so many more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We're back, and the Urban Meyer train of bad news never ceases to end. A story literally just came out in the Tampa Bay Times that the former kicker claims that Urban kicked him during a summer practice. This story will be making a lot of news as the Urban Meyer experiment has been ill-fated from start to finish. Let's continue with more phone calls here. Trevor in Mississippi, you're on the air. Go right ahead, Trevor.
Well, Paul, let me start by saying this. The Baylor Bears ain't played nobody, and the Ole Miss Rebels are going to hang 50 on them, plain and simple. It's a party in the SIP, and I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think it's a really fascinating game, but I'm down on Matt Corral.
Well, you're down on Matt Corral? What do you mean?
Well, I meant that in a positive way.
Oh, okay, good. Because he's a fighter, Paul. He came from a long line of Marines, and, you know, it's just every time he touches the field, you can just tell that he has that kind of blood in him. You know, he's a fighter. He fights for yards. He's not afraid of nobody, especially not the Baylor Bears.
Appreciate the pep talk. Let me know. Dustin is in Georgia. Hello, Dustin.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, man, I was just going to see. I ain't seen where they posted the Dan Lennon salary yet for Oregon. Do you have any insight on that for us?
I thought it was $4 or $5 million. I really don't remember, but it's a lot more than most of us have ever seen, I can assure you.
Yeah, I'm sure of that, too. I just seen where they had posted it, so I was just wondering if you had any insight.
Yeah, he was doing well at Georgia. He's making close to $2 million a year, but I don't think it's one of these mega salaries, but usually you start somebody like that off at a competitive salary, and then you kick him up once he starts. I mean, he's inexperienced in terms of being a head coach, so I think that's the reason why the salary is where it is.
I appreciate it, Paul.
Thank you very much. Dan Lanning, of course, will be shuttling back and forth. Rick is up next in Florida. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Thanks
we
for taking
well.
My call.
Thank you.
I hope you and your family are doing well. Listen, I want to respond to the caller earlier who said that nobody of a Florida fan is happy with the Billy Napier hire. Let me tell you something. My entire family went to Florida, all my cousins, all my friends, season ticket holders. We are ecstatic about the Billy Napier hire. You know, if you do your research on the guy, he's a young, proven winner. And I think today with the Kamari Wilson pickup, the five-star or four-star safety, depending on who you what recruiting program you look at, is huge. I mean, this is what this guy's going to bring to Florida. He's going to have a focus on recruiting, and he knows the X's and O's. He's training under the best, and I'm excited about it. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say about what other coaches –
Yeah, Rick, I feel the exact same way. We talked to Billy last Friday, I believe, and he is a phenomenal recruiter, but don't expect too much. I mean, Billy Napier is not responsible for this being the worst-ranked Florida recruiting class in modern history.
I think it has to do with timing. It's unfortunate timing. But in the few days he's been on the job, he's pulling in some good big names, and with a new facility, I think the future is bright. I mean, he reminds me of a young, hungry Urban Meyer. You look at some of the videos of him at Louisiana Lafayette, it just makes you want to run through a brick wall for the guy. I mean, that's the kind of guy we need in Florida, someone who has a focus.
I feel good about it, and you know what's this is somebody that a lot of folks have wanted over the last couple of years. And I think he'll change the narrative very quickly. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Carl, who is up next. Hello, Carl.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just want to, you know, I just want to say that, you know, I love Billy Napier coming there, but it seems to me like, what, Georgia was number one, Bama was number two, and I think Tennessee was like number four, and spending money on recruiting. I mean, well, Florida was way on down there. Has it got something to do with how much money you're spending on recruiting, or, you know, what's the deal?
Well, what you're talking about is the expenditure to conduct recruiting. We're not talking about what the players are making. Yeah, Georgia, you have to spend money. What are we talking about? We're talking about travel. We're not talking about what you and I would do is, get on a plane and go to Atlanta and change planes and then take another plane to wherever. I mean, these guys are flying private planes, yeah, which cost a lot of money to operate, and that's really the biggest expense. Everything else is...
Well, I know, but why ain't Florida spending some money? It seems to me like old dad's getting left out in the heat or in the sun or whatever you want to call it.
I think I mentioned this the other day, but I talked to Dan Mullen in Atlanta, where he was doing our show on Saturday, and you know, he brought it up. He said, it's a false narrative that I didn't care about recruiting. We had top 10 classes, but the problem is top 10 doesn't cut it anymore. If you look at the top 10 right now, the top three are in the SEC. So, more than that. I think Kentucky might be in the top 10 now with this latest commitment or latest signing. So
yeah,
you can't be good. You have to be great.
Yeah. Okay. Can I just add one more thing?
Right. Go ahead.
I'm from a small town in Georgia, and our high school team just won the state championship. I didn't need to do a throw out for the Fitzgerald Purple Hurricanes.
Well, congratulations. By the way, Missouri is in the top 10, not Kentucky, but Kentucky, that may change. Kentucky just got a huge five-star commitment, signed. There's a big difference between a signed piece of paper and a commitment. They got the signed piece of paper. Let's continue, and how about Bill in Nashville? Hey, Bill.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Hey, so I'm calling about, obviously, it's a National Signing Day, and I saw some tweets today on Twitter. I think one was from the former quarterback at Ole Miss, Chad Kelly, basically saying if a billionaire really wanted his team to be good or had a college that he really liked, he could pay 25 of the best recruits as much money as he wanted to play for his football team. I kind of want to get your thoughts on how the NIL will be changed in future years to kind of hopefully prevent this, because – I feel like right now it's kind of like whoever has the most money can get whatever players they want. And I know that's always kind of been the case, but hopefully with NIL and so hopefully it can regulate somehow. The NCAA probably won't do it, though.
Well, nobody's going to regulate it. I think you can be assured of that. I mean, in theory, you're right. But I always ask this question, and we just think that multi-zillionaires are sitting around going, how can I spend my money to help my local college? A lot of people, you know, give money to colleges in different ways, whether through endowments or funding, various means. The reason most people became billionaires is that they usually like a return on their money, and they're just not going to boldly and blatantly spend money on players on NIL deals if they don't think there's any value in that. There's too many players out there. Now, are they helping? Are they contributing? Sure. There's definitely a movement going on under the table that helps players get something, but it's not a straight shot as we some of us may think it is. Ed is in North Carolina. You're on the air. Go right ahead, Ed.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
You're doing well.
We are. Thank you.
I'm a Tennessee fan. I'm a little concerned about the coach not recruiting some big prospects in the state of Tennessee, and he relies more on the transfer portal. And right now they're ranked 18th in their recruits, and that's not going to cut it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hear you. I mean, certainly being in the middle of the pack in the SEC – has some disadvantages. It may look good. You know, I think rankings are a little deceiving. You know, what's in those rankings? And they're not a clear indicator anymore. You just said it. The transfer portal is the equalizer, and you have to depend on it nowadays, especially when you're somebody like Josh Heupel. Where would Tennessee have been last year without the transfer portal? They got their most important player. They also lost a couple of key players, but they managed. And Tennessee, unlike some schools, doesn't really have a natural base. The state of Tennessee does not produce players like Alabama or Texas or Florida. So they have to go elsewhere, and the constant change has affected them. They used to recruit very well in the Atlanta area, in the Charlotte area, in other places, and that's been affected by the carousel of coaches. Thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. Jerry is up next. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, how you doing, pal?
Jerry, we're doing great.
That's great. I kind of say, I ain't going to say I told you so, because you the man. But what I am going to say is the LSU should hire Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders would have bought them boys up in that LSU, and that would have been my only fear.
You know, Jerry, I was on a show a couple of months ago when they fired Helton at Southern Cal, and Mike Greenberg asked me, what do you think about Deion Sanders? And I think they ought to hire him. And I was serious, and I had a lot of people in the industry say, are you out of your mind? And I'm not at no, but I agree with you. I think there's a perfect place for him. I'm not sure it was LSU, though. I think there's a better job for Deion Sanders, and I think it's pretty self-evident what it is. But yeah, he is proving himself every day, and I think that is significant. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Tim is in New Jersey. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are great. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. I was just wondering, I was a Division I All-American. I played for George Welch many years ago for Navy.
Oh, wow.
And today is a signing day, and I always wondered, you know, they make such a big deal about these players, you know, being ranked and what levels and all that. As with all the analytics going on, I wonder if anybody's ever gone back and tried to figure out, you know, who was the bust and how many of these kids really make it, because they make such a big deal out of it now. Of course, back when I was playing, it wasn't such a big deal, but now they make a big deal of it. I just wonder, you know, if anybody's gone back.
Tim, I have seen analysis, and by the way, you played for really a legendary coach in George.
Oh,
Welch.
I know. I called you when he passed.
I do remember that. You know, there's so many factors that you have to keep up with. So let's say you're 16th in the country and you have all these four stars and 2 5 stars. Where are they still there in a year? I mean, Spencer Rattler, we're going to talk about him in a minute. He was Oklahoma's top recruit 3 years ago. He's gone. So are many other players. And that's how you have to track it. You can't track it, because what you do on signing day is really for hype. It's when the coach shows up tonight at the booster meeting and says, we closed with 7 players in the last 24 hours, and we're 16th, and we couldn't move. That's feeding the beast. That's not really solving your needs.
Yeah, I would agree. And with all the rule changes about how you can change from one team to another, that takes a lot into the calculation as well. But I'm just kind of curious. You know, it makes such a big deal about all these kids, and then I just wonder how many really, you know, pan out. Or even finish, or even get a degree.
The degree is a totally different story. But hey, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. A lot of the top players end up performing well. But it is worth noting that last year's what would have been the top player on this day, skipped his senior year, the number one quarterback, and he went to Ohio State. And he's already gone in the portal and landed in Texas. That's how fleeting all this is. We'll talk next to Shane Beamer. He had a good portal, and he had a good day on the recruiting trails. We'll talk to him next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Busy day with so many head coaches dropping by. It's National Signing Day, in case you were wondering. And Shane Beamer joins us. He has done quite well today and even before National Signing Day. Coach, how are you, and how has the day gone?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you having me on. Hope you are as well. Today's been good. You know, it's there's always activity on signing day across the country, and we were no exception. But, you know, with us, the majority of our class committed to us in the summertime. And a credit to those young men and their families, they stayed committed throughout the summer, throughout the season, and up until signing day. So I think all but four that we signed today have been committed to us since before the season started, and they're the right kind of people that we want in this program, that's for sure.
Coach, when you get an early commitment, it's not like you can just forget about it. How do you nuance it where you don't want to be over the top, but you also don't want that young man to think you've forgotten about him?
Yeah, just that. I mean, to me, you really got to start recruiting them when they do commit. I mean, just because you know that everybody else is now, they now know who they have to go attack, so to speak. And, you know, we credit those young men and credit our current players. I mean, they're the great recruiters for us when they develop relationships with these prospects when they come on our campus. The job that our current players did helping develop relationships. And what we do, Paul, is just if a young man commits, we continue to recruit them even harder and just really try and develop that relationship more and more throughout the process up until signing day. And I think with them, when you do commit early, you get to see that what you see with us is what you get, and that we don't change when you commit. If anything, that relationship gets even stronger, and that's what we showed, and all those guys stayed with us, which I'm excited about.
We all know that recruiting is literally an everyday occurrence, but you know, you're coaching a football team, you're getting ready for the next game. During the season, how do you compartmentalize time for recruiting, and how much time does it take?
Yeah, it takes a lot. I mean, it's every single day, and I've been fortunate to have worked for some great head coaches that, you know, made such a huge emphasis on recruiting. Going back to when I was a graduate assistant at Tennessee for Philip Fulmer and the emphasis that he made, and then, you know, being at Mississippi State with Sylvester Croom and the emphasis that he made, and they all had their own styles. And then working for Kirby in Athens his first 2 years was a great experience for me, just seeing how we balanced recruiting and coaching when I was at Georgia, and then the things that we did at Oklahoma. So it's every single day. We certainly set aside time, you know, during the week, literally every single day or night to do something recruiting-wise, whether it be watching video, making phone calls, writing letters. You know, we have a process or a system that we use each and every week, and ultimately you have to win football games, but it makes it a whole lot easier to win football games when you have great players. So there's a lot of time that goes into it during the week to get those great players to your campus.
Coach, at least according to your fan base, the biggest recruit came in the other day, and that was Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma. Let's talk about that for a second. And I've read the obvious that your relationship with him at OU was certainly one of the keys.
Yeah, we're excited about being able to add Spencer and then Austin Stogner, a unbelievable tight end from Oklahoma as well. I was the tight ends coach at Oklahoma. I was with Spencer and Stogner both while I was there, obviously. Was with Spencer his first season as Jalen Hurts' backup, and then in 2020 when he was the starting quarterback. And I know what Spencer's about as a quarterback and a person. And same thing with Austin Stogner. And, you know, when Austin Stogner went in the portal a couple weeks ago, and his dad, who I have a great relationship with Austin and his family, his dad reached out, and Austin visited South Carolina, and Austin ended up communicating to Spencer how amazing a place this is and that we have all the resources you need here to win championships and be successful at the highest level. And we started communicating with Spencer at that point, and it happened pretty fast. And And he's excited about the next chapter of his football story. And we had a lot of success with young men that we added to our program in the 2021 season from the transfer that transferred in. And they're great players, but they're great people as well. And these two young men are no different. They're great players and they're great people. They're eager to get here and start competing. And, you know, any success that we had this season, Paul, was a lot because of the closeness of this football team and the way that we are a team and care about each other. And I'm eager for Austin and Spencer both to get in here and jump right into the middle of that.
In terms of Spencer, he had to have gone through one of the most bizarre seasons anyone has ever had to endure. He started the season as the Heisman favorite, and we all know the rest of it. Can you share with us where you think he is right now, just in terms of trying to put one school behind him and get ready to start competing at South Carolina?
Yeah, I would say if you asked him, he would tell you that, you know, he's certainly appreciative of his time at Oklahoma and all he accomplished there, and he's eager for the next step and bettering himself as a quarterback and as a player before he goes to the next level. And obviously the 2021 season wasn't the way that Spencer expected, didn't go the way he expected it to go. But I was also around Spencer in 2020 when he faced some adversity then. I mean, people forget we won the Big 12 championship at Oklahoma in 2020, but we started out 1-2 and lost to Iowa State and lost to Kansas State and blew second half leads in both games. And then we played Texas down in the rivalry game down in Dallas, and Spencer, Coach Riley benched him during the first half. And then Spencer came back in the second half. We ended up winning the game, I think, in four overtimes, didn't lose a game the rest of the season, won the Big 12. Oklahoma beat Florida in the Cotton Bowl last year. So Spencer's faced adversity and difficulty before and was made better because of it. And he certainly faced some adversity this season. And I know he already had a chip on his shoulder, and I would say he's got an even bigger chip on his shoulder now and is excited about the opportunity to come here and compete in 2022 in the SEC.
I would like to suggest that maybe now that this day is almost over, you can – you know, relax, sleep late, and take some time off. But there is a bowl game to get ready for.
Yeah, I wish I could. I'm going to leave here. I'm going to go meet with a group of donors for about an hour. Then I'm going to do my weekly radio show for an hour. And then I'll probably be texting and talking to the recruits that we're trying to sign next year at this time. But you're right. We're excited. It's a good problem to have that we're so busy. It beats the alternative of being done with football for the season. And I'm so excited. I love this team that I'm coaching right now. I was going to be really sad if we didn't have a month together again here at the end of the season to play in a bowl game. And these players here found a way to get bowl eligible. And, you know, every bowl is great, but each bowl is different. And this is definitely a special opportunity for us. One, for the University of South Carolina to go back to a bowl game for the first time since 2018, but then to be able to play right up the road in Charlotte against a great team like the University of North Carolina and Mack Brown and an extremely talented team. So it's a great regional matchup, a natural rival with North Carolina. And I know our guys are excited. We've been on the practice field 3 days this week. We've had three really good practices and love the way that our guys are working right now.
Coach, thanks for making time. I know the next assignment is right around the corner. So be well. Get at least 5 minutes break between speaking engagements, and we hope to see you very, very soon.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, and hope to see you in Charlotte when we're up there. Thanks for having me.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Coach. Great to have you here as they get ready for a bowl game against North Carolina. We're taking a break. We will be back. More of your phone calls and more guests.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. It's been a busy one as we begin to see things wind down on National Signing Day, but there's been a lot of movement. We had Jimbo Fisher on here 2 hours ago, hoping to finish strong in the race for number one. Let's check the board. And it looks like that's exactly what is happening right now. A&M at the number one position in the country. Alabama, Georgia, Missouri up to number four. Kentucky with a big signing in the last hour. At five, South Carolina, Auburn. We had both the Auburn and South Carolina coaches, as well as Jimbo. Arkansas in the middle there. LSU, Tennessee, 10th. That's 22nd overall. Ole Miss is making a little bit of a move. Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Florida in the rear. We have a couple more guests to come. Join us here. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. It's been a breakneck day here, and let's continue with Carter in California. Hello, Carter.
Hello. Hi. How's it going, Paul?
Very well. Thank you for the call.
Yeah. I just like obviously the Heisman happened last week, and the biggest snub I think was Will Anderson from Alabama. And I didn't get why he wasn't in the finalists. And like basically my question was like, do you think it had to do anything with like Aiden Hutchinson obviously being a senior and like kind of like the media hyping him up a lot after the Ohio State game? Like, do you think the media basically decides who wins the Heisman?
Yeah, Carter, I think that had everything to do with it. And as a Heisman voter, I had Anderson second, but Hutchinson third. But
yeah.
You can. To me, Bryce was the obvious pick. And after that, you were really voting for who would sit in New York. And Anderson came close to there's a certain percentage that gets you an invitation. Last year, five people were invited, even though they did it differently because of the virtual during COVID. But I understand the sympathy, and I feel the same way, but you know, it's difficult for voters to understand that position. And I think Hutchinson's position was just a little easier to read because of what we had just seen. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Fred is up next in Texas.
My man, Paul Feinbaum. How are you doing, brother?
Fred, how are you?
I am doing well. And look, I should know better than to ask you how you are doing, because you're always doing well. You got the best job in America. Everybody knows that, so, right?
Thank you. You're right.
Paul, I had to give a call. You and I haven't spoken in a while, but National Signing Day, and there's one theme that we've been hearing, and you've been talking about it, doing a great job talking about it all day, and it's the changes in recruiting, the portal, and most recently, of course, the NIL. And it seems as if a lot of folks are losing their minds over the number one recruit in America going to Jackson State. First, hats off to Deion Sanders and what he's been able to do to really put a spotlight on his institution and to really be able to turn that program around. And he's got to go on, I think, in the right direction. But here's my question to you, Paul, because it seems as if what I'm hearing is this. Everything's changing. It's chaos. There's no predictability, and it's going to ruin the sport. And it seems like those are people who have been around the sport, let me put this gently, for a while, very experienced with the sport, and I'm not hearing that as much from people who are the players and the ones who are going to benefit from it. So is it just the old fogies that don't like it, the way they didn't want free agency in baseball, the way they didn't want the Stars and Stripes, Catamaran, and the America's Cup back in the 80s. What is it, Paul? Help me figure it out.
Yeah, I think there's a lot under the table here, and you're a smart guy, Fred. You can probably guess on where some of it lies. I think people view college football in their own era. And, you know, if you went to school in the 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, you have it a certain way. But let's be honest, Fred, it's always been corrupt, okay? And now it's just we're not hiding it. And I thought that's what Jimbo Fisher said. He was very honest about his analysis. The cheating has always gone on. It's just a matter of whether anybody got caught. And now the fact that, you know, some of it's legal, not the cheating, but the ability for players to earn money. And secondly, the NCAA is essentially out of business. So nobody's going to legislate or enforce.
Well, that's right. I think there's a good bit of that in the NCAA wondering, how do they stay relevant? How do they keep control of the table? But at the end of the day, Paul, I think that anything that will help the players to finally, and you've said it, that there's always been the rumor mill that players have been getting money in some way or another, and some of that has proven to be true. But the bottom line is that the kids are the ones putting it on the line, and the schools and the athletic directors and the coaches, they're making millions, and the kids are walking around seeing all these jerseys. They don't make a nickel. It had to change, and I think it's just a matter of catching up with the times. And that seems to make sense when you break
How fair is it when a coach can make $10 million a year and the player can't get anything? So, I mean, that's really the problem. And, yeah, I mean, there was a time when coaches did well, but you know, I don't even know what the number would be, but you know, they earned a living comparable to other successful people in their space. Now they earn, you know, far more than any of us could ever dream of making. And I think it's that's why they had to go along with it. I mean, there's so much money in this industry now with television and with the explosion of every aspect that to deny a player to make something, I don't know what the right number is, but they deserve something.
Well, obviously, they deserve something, and I think today is one of those days that you're going to see as a watermark looking back. You're going to say, hey, that was a milestone, what happened at Jackson State. And here's one more thing I want you to think about and for the listeners to think about. When we look back in 10 years, when we say, my goodness, what was all the kerfuffle about? Had to sneak in kerfuffle. What was all the kerfuffle about? The players deserved it, and it's just a matter of bringing it out into the open, letting them being able to go out, fly their wares, just like the coaches. And one more thing, too. The coaches who are saying it's unfair, players are bailing on their teams in the midst of bowl season, listen, that's just a factor of the calendar. If the players are going to make a move, they got to move at a certain time, just like the coaches do. The coaches seem to get a little bit more leeway unless they're leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Mike Leach had some comments about that the other day. Dabo came out today with his thoughts on the NIL. And I've evolved on this. I mean, there was a time when I took the NCAA legislation seriously. I don't anymore. I began my career as a reporter investigating malfeasance because I thought it was wrong. I thought it was nearly criminal for one school to funnel money under the table to gain an unfair advantage. But now, Fred, we live in a different world, and every player I talk to, former player, current player, believes the same thing. That I'm talking about in recent years. I'm not talking about guys that played in the 50s or 60s. But the modern player thinks that players deserve to receive some compensation.
Well, you had Roman Harper on earlier, the former Saint, Bama great too. Hey, I give him credit for that. He had some of the smartest, wittiest comments on it, and I tell you what, that segment, I hope it gets picked up by a lot of people because he put it in perspective. It was so tight the way he described it, and what was then, what's now. And Paul, I got to give you credit, brother. You in on it. 2021, look, you were talking like it's 2031. You know the future. Give me the future, Paul, as we go on the way out. Paul Feinbaum, the great American, give me what you see in 2 years on this.
I don't think anything will change from a negative standpoint. And all the doomsdayers who say college football has been destroyed, I've heard that before, Fred. That has been a theme for many, many years. It's not going to – people love college football. People love live sports. And this year was a huge bounce-back year for the sport. Last year was an outlier, understandably so. But we are back to where we were and better in spite of everything else. We'll take a break. We have a special guest right around the corner. His name may sound familiar to you, and we'll talk to the son of a former Tennessee great right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.